The Tom Woods Show, episode 1973.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, for all you libertarians stuck in the miserable dating scene, I have just the thing for you. Drome is a free new values-based dating app. You pick deal breakers and deal makers, such as politics, religion, any other values. As soon as someone matches your deal breakers and deal makers and you match theirs, you get a notification. Sign up for free at drome.date/woods. That's drome.date/woods. Hey, folks, Tom Woods here. We are checking in with what's going on in Israel today. And we're going to do so with our old friend Rafi Farber, who publishes the investment letter, The Endgame Investor. And he's also got a blog that I think you'll find very interesting, thejewishlibertarian.com. So Rafi, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's great to be here.
Just yesterday, I was talking to somebody in Victoria, in Australia, which is where Melbourne is, and getting a rather grim picture of the situation there. Now, quite obviously, Israel is not quite that. Very, very, very few places are like that. But it was very helpful to be able to speak to somebody, not just read an article, but speak to somebody who's there and get a fuller understanding of what's happening. And at the end, by the way, Rafi, I said to him, you're living in a gigantic prison and there seems to be no prospect of anything changing. Why don't you just get out of there? And the answer in part was, they won't let you leave. It's unbelievable what's been going on. So let's talk about Israel, because Israel's been all over the headlines around the world lately, and in large part because of the numbers related to the vaccines and infection and who's getting sick, the vaccinated or the unvaccinated, and are we seeing waning efficacy of the vaccines? All these sorts of questions have revolved around numbers coming out of Israel. But there's more than just that. There is a kind of internal passport system that I want to talk about that looked like it was withdrawn and then they put it back in. But you want to talk in particular about maybe something about the cultural differences, let's say. For example, let me just start with a quick example. I was reading the other day where somebody was comparing the United States and the UK with Ireland. And they were saying that in the United States and the UK, if you are perceived as following along with government requirements or recommendations, well, then you know, this is viewed as just conformity and therefore bad. But that in Ireland, it's viewed as conformity and therefore good. So there is a cultural difference in Ireland that you know may lead to different outcomes. So talk to me about what we need to know, those of us who do not live in Israel, need to know about Israel in order to understand better what the response to the various restrictions and the mass vaccination and so on and so forth have been.
Well, obviously, like any other country, it's going to differ by location within the country. I live in the Golan Heights, which is sort of equivalent to the Wyoming of the Wyoming of Israel. Very few people, sparsely populated. There's a lot of Druze here. We get along nicely. And people generally take things a little bit less seriously here than they do in the rest of the country, like in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or something. But generally speaking, Israel's response to, or the people of Israel's response to these restrictions, it's more like we have to follow the state's dictates and orders, at least officially, and not flaunt them, you know, in public or just walk around without a mask or not get vaccinated, because we have to accept the legitimacy of the state, because the state itself is what is saving us from, massacres by non-Jews. I'm not saying this is like a conscious decision that people always think this all the time at the top of their heads, but that is really how Israel was founded as a state. I mean, the Jews came back to the land of Israel and, you know, they fought for their survival right after the Holocaust. And whether you're secular or religious, you know, there's this fear that if you're living, in the diaspora, the non-Jews can turn on you in a second, and then there can be more gas chambers and whatever's going to happen. So,
by the way, I find this fascinating because, of course, there are various ways that the state tries to build up its legitimacy in people's minds. And as you say, they don't necessarily have to say so explicitly, but it's just sort of understood. This is fascinating that in Israel, this is one of the ways that the state legitimizes itself.
Right. And to a certain extent, I mean, I'm a libertarian anarchist Rothbardian, but even I give some legitimacy to, you know, I'd rather be under a Jewish state than a non-Jewish state, because there seems to be slightly less of a chance that a Jewish state would put me in a gas chamber than you know, somewhere in the diaspora, which I don't, you never know what's going to happen. But the problem is that the state can go crazy, as it is apparently doing. And even in the most libertarian parties, the libertarian political parties in Israel, of which I was a member at one point, the leader of that libertarian party, and his name is Moshe Feiglin, and I campaigned for him and I ran on his list once in one of the elections. He's as close to a libertarian as you can get, but he rejects that label and he still assigns some kind of holy status to a state being run by Jews itself because it's what protects the people.
Yeah.
So when this started and the masks started and it was 2 weeks to flatten the curve, I was very suspicious, and I know you were too, but I gave it 2 weeks. I took it literally. It was like, I didn't know what this virus was. I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to give it 2 weeks and that's it. So I wore a mask for 2 weeks, and then they didn't come off. I didn't expect them to. I was like, okay, I see what's going on now. And now it's time to fight. I woke up very quickly because I'm very suspicious, and I do not ascribe any holiness to a Jewish state. So when that happened, I still wore a mask after 2 weeks, but then I put a yellow star on it just to, you know, give people warning that, do you see what's happening? And I'm not going to give this legitimacy, and they're already starting to divide people. That did not go over well, because immediately when you have Holocaust imagery, the people here automatically say, no, the state cannot be the Nazis, and that's impossible. You cannot make that comparison because they're the holy institution that protects us from those kinds of things. So that extends to the lockdowns. You have to follow the lockdowns. And it's not necessarily because people are freaked out about the virus or they think they're going to die. There are some people like that, but it's not the majority. Most people are just, we have to respect what the state says because we have to stay together. We have to maintain our unity, or, you know, everything's going to fall apart. We're going to go back into the diaspora, and that's going to be horrible. So that's pretty much what's going on. And with the vaccinations, there's another thing you have to understand about the media here. There's no equivalent of Fox News in Israel. There's no other side to the media. The media is almost completely controlled by the government narrative. So there's no channel you can really turn to that's going to be vaccine hesitant or anything like that. You're just going to get the party line from the Misrad Abriut, from the health ministry. And that's pretty much it. There are exceptions, small exceptions to that, when, let's say, the government makes a really stupid mistake and there's a hot mic, which happened, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago, where the health minister admitted to the interior minister that there was no point to any of these green passports health-wise except to force non-vaccinated people to get vaccinated. That was caught in a hot mic, and it was published, and the media jumped all over it, but they always pull their punches here and they don't want to go against the health ministry line. In terms of the actual statistics and the studies, what people will tell you is that they don't really care about that so much. There's not really that much of a fear of the virus among the mainstream. There are pockets of resistance. But they'll say, look, just get vaccinated. It's probably not going to kill you. And we just want to get over this. We want to get on with our lives. So just, like, stop fighting and this will be over eventually. And as long as, you know, the economy is basically functioning, it'll continue that way. Because nobody wants to go against the state line and risk its dissolution, or, you know, the whole country's united on this and it's a very holy thing. You know, that's the considerations here.
We did see some footage of protests, people protesting the so-called green passport, but you're telling me that this is very, very much a minority?
I haven't been at the protests. I think the proportions of the vaccinated to the unvaccinated is something like 80-20. So 80% vaccinated, 20% not vaccinated. And those that are not going to get vaccinated, they're not going to get vaccinated because of these green passports. They've already withstood most of the pressure, mostly because they work from home. And those who don't work from home, most of them are going to succumb to it. And I don't know how many of the 20% are ultra-Orthodox, who basically don't pay attention to the state anyway, and how much are Arabs who also don't pay attention to the state anyway, because they're the exceptions that are not part of this whole state is holy thing. But there have been some protests in Tel Aviv at Kikar Habima, I think, at one of the main squares in Tel Aviv. But they are not cross-sectoral. They're mostly secular Israelis. So it's hard to get the religious Zionists together with them, especially, and this goes back to the point about the state being holy, the religious Zionists, which are not the ultra-Orthodox and they're not the secular, But they're the strongest in terms of let's get vaccinated, let's do exactly what the state says, because they assign like a really a religious type of holiness to the existence of the state. Not necessarily like the secular, which are like, yeah, we need the state as a practical thing to protect us from the non-Jews outside. But the religious Zionists really like, this is you know, the beginning of the messianic era, and the state is like the tool of God to bring us into full redemption. So they can't really violate what the state says. So they have to push vaccinations and push these green passports. And it's pretty much through the entire sector. I mean, if you go back to 2005, for example, and the disengagement from the Gaza Strip, right? That was a very controversial, painful thing, especially for the religious Zionists that were the victims of that. And they went through it anyway. I mean, they didn't rebel. They let it happen. Why? Because you cannot, according to their thinking, you cannot violate the state's rights, even if they are destroying your property and ruining your life entirely. So yeah, there's no getting over that mentality. It's like a form of idolatry. They're really worshiping the state in a way, in my view, at least.
Well, what I want to know is, in the United States, I don't know how it's going to all turn out. I mean, there are a lot of unvaccinated people, but they're being put under tremendous pressure to get vaccinated. And some percentage of them, but we can't know right now what that percentage is, will yield to the pressure and get vaccinated, but a whole bunch probably won't. And what this means for places with vaccine passports is that they are therefore cutting down their potential clientele arbitrarily. And given that a lot of places like New York City, most establishments are operating on razor-thin profit margins as it is, and now you're going to say 30% of potential people can't come and you're going to undermine tourism and whatever, that's a big problem. But if in Israel, if you're saying that the compliance is so high, then maybe the existence of a passport system doesn't hurt business quite so much. What do you think?
Well, it will. The other thing is that a lot of business in Israel is tourism, and tourism has been completely destroyed. Yeah. I mean, they have this asinine program where they're getting former tour guides, and some of these are my friends, former tour guides to be COVID mask policemen on buses and, you know, try to co-opt them into the enforcement industry of these COVID rules. And, you know, it's ridiculous. But one thing about compliance, I'm trying to split hairs here. I'm not saying that compliance itself in terms of perfectly putting on a mask and listening to these green passports 100%, that's not really what it is. It's more like you can't openly rebel. So if you're going to put on a mask, just put it on your chin and then we'll just leave you alone. But with the green passports, and you know, I'll start with this story, that when the green passports started, they just became enforced for real, you know, maybe a few weeks ago. And we have my family, I have 5 children, thank God, just like you. And we have a membership to the gym and the pool, right? And there's a sign there that you have to follow the green passport, the green pass. So, you know, I spoke to my wife. It was like, look, you know, we're just going to go in, all of us at the same time, the whole family, and we're just going to go to the pool and we're just going to swim. And whatever they do, they do. So we walked in. She said, do you have a green pass? We said, no. She said, well, here, take a test. And we basically said, no, we're not going to take a test. We're going to go swimming. Do what you want. So she calls the head guy at the country club, who we know because we go there all the time. And, you know, we're getting changed for the pool, about to go into the pool. And he comes up to us and he starts saying, you know, he's going to call the police if we don't get out. So I said, okay, call the police. Do what you need. And, you know, our hearts are thumping. We're really nervous. We get into the pool with our kids, and our kids are young, and a lot of them don't understand exactly what's going on. So about a half an hour later, he comes back, and there's almost nobody in the pool because this is the first day of the green pass, and everyone's afraid of, you know, forced testing. So we're in the pool, and he comes up to me again, and he's like, can I talk to you for a second? Like, in a polite tone. I'm like, all right. So he says, look, you're valued customers. You know, I don't want any trouble. There's a law here. I know a lot of people like you don't want to get vaccinated, and I have nothing against you. There's a rule here that I have to follow because, you know, we live in a state and I'm subject to the law. I was like, look, I understand that. I don't want to, he just wants to make sure that I'm not going to go out there and parade him as someone who doesn't care about the COVID rules, because that would really hurt him. So I was like, look, I respect you. You respect me. I'm not going to give you any trouble. I'm just going to come here. I'm going to do my workouts. I'm going to come with my family. I'm going to go swimming. And we're not going to cause you any trouble. He's like, okay, cool. So now we go in there and they don't give us any trouble. They never ask us for a test or anything like that. And that's it. So basically it's like, as long as, I don't know what it's like in Tel Aviv, if I could pull this off in a bigger city, I'm in a small city. But if you just stand up to people and tell them your principles and that, look, you're not going to do it, then they'll pretty much back off as long as they don't think that you're going to, you know, go after them or publicize them for violating the rules. It's mostly just fear of the state, of the dissolution of the state, or, you know, financial penalties. The other story that I had was more of the beginning of this. I was just walking to pick up my car in the industrial zone of the city, and there's like nobody around me. This, I think, was in December of 2020. And this was like on a day when they were really enforcing the rules. They do it like, you know, every few months, they give a whole bunch of tickets out for not wearing masks or something. So they pick me up. I'm just walking. Nobody's around me. They pick me up, tell me to put a mask on. I say no. Then they put me in the police car and they book me and they take me to the station. And they keep insisting that I put a mask on, and I wouldn't. So they take me outside again. So, like, you know, I didn't identify myself until they threatened to put me in jail for the night. And I'm like, okay, fine. And I give them my name. And they're like, okay, so we're going to give you a ticket for not wearing a mask. It's going to be 500 shekels. And I'm like, okay, do what you got to do. Just let me go. And then they let me go, and I never got a ticket. Never. Never once have I gotten a ticket for not wearing a mask. And I do not wear a mask anywhere at all. The only exception to that was I put on a mask when I was having my interview to get a gun license. Because if I didn't put a mask on, I wouldn't have been able to be armed. And, you know, I think it's an important time to be armed.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the only time I put on a mask.
Wow, this is all very, very interesting. I don't know that your experiences, I think, can be duplicated in many settings. Mm-hmm. I don't know that in New York City you're going to be able to get away with going into a high-end restaurant where showing your vaccine credentials is like it's a way for midwits to tell the world that they believe in science, in quotation marks, you know? And so they all, you know, both sides seem to enjoy the transaction. Mm-hmm. You know, I give my customer the opportunity to show me how sophisticated he is, and he accepts it. The whole thing is crazy and, I don't know, midwit IQ level. But can you tell us anything about what we've been reading? Because I keep getting contradictory statements as to what the numbers out of Israel really mean. Because I've heard it said, well, this goes to show that the efficacy wanes and this is why you need boosters. And then on the other hand, I've heard people say, oh, you're just an idiot. You don't know how to read numbers. Well, actually, what the numbers in Israel show are that the vaccines are working amazingly well. Well, both can't be true at once. What's happening?
No, the vaccines are not working from what I've seen. The vaccinated are getting sick, are getting ill. I have never taken a COVID test ever, so I don't even know if I'm immune now. I've had a few sniffles in the past year and a half. Maybe that was it, maybe not. I mean, some of my friends have gotten the serological test and they're immune. But, I mean, the cases are spiking. Some people are still sick and dying. And there are very, very few unvaccinated people. So they're spreading from vaccinated to vaccinated. It's just, it's not working. That's all I can say, really. I mean, the numbers are pretty obvious. I mean, if over 80% of the people are vaccinated, there should be herd immunity now if it worked. But there's not, and it doesn't. And there was a recent study, I think Ron Paul quoted on his last show, that I don't remember the exact numbers, but the Delta variant is much more likely, I think like 27 times more likely to reinfect a vaccinated person over a vaccinated person. And here I can risk giving a scientific explanation for that, because I spoke to an emergency room doctor in Cincinnati that comes to my city that has a house here in Israel. And he comes here every for the holidays. So he came for Rosh Hashanah and we sat down, we talked, we're good friends. So he explained to me that the reason that natural immunity is 27 times greater protection from the Delta variant than the vaccine immunity is that the vaccine, the spike protein that supposedly gives you immunity, is very specific to a very, you know, small part of the virus. So if that tiny part mutates, then that spike protein that your body's producing is not going to give you immunity to that Delta. Whereas the natural immunity that your body produces is more of like a wide glove over the virus and has more areas that it touches, and it can recognize the virus better even if it mutates a little bit. So it's very possible, in his opinion, that and I'm not saying this as a doctor, I'm just quoting an opinion of a certified emergency room doctor that I heard, that the mass vaccination of the country is specifically what is causing the high case rate in the Delta variant here.
Well, that's very interesting and not exactly what we've been told up to now. Moreover, it seems like where they're going with this is that it goes to show the need for a booster shot.
Yeah.
And so now it looks as if what will happen is your green passport will expire if you haven't had the booster. Is that where they're going?
Yes, that is where we're going. And I want to plug this into the political situation here a little bit and try to synthesize it. That, yeah, now they're saying you have to have a third vaccine or you are considered unvaccinated and you don't have your green pass anymore and you can't get into whatever you need to get into. So there's really no evidence that a third shot is going to do much. And I think that there was like a headline today, something like a panel of experts, you know, panel of experts is something we hear every 5 minutes now, panel of experts. But a panel of experts are saying that there's no cause for a, you know, a third booster shot. We got to hold back on it. So if it's in the mainstream media and it's a panel of experts, it's usually our enemies. So even they're saying that you don't need the booster shot. But in terms of how this plays into the political situation, you might remember Benjamin Netanyahu, who is, you know, basically the popular guy and has a lot of support among his fan base. But he was recently ousted from office by this like motley crew of small, tiny political parties that sort of got together. And here you have the religious Zionists, the right wing of the right wing, which is like, you know, settlers everywhere, let's build outposts, and the left wing communists who hate the settlers, and the anti-communist Russians and the Arabs, and all these tiny parties that really have nothing at all to do with each other, except they wanted to get Netanyahu out of there. You know, so they all came together, and the prime minister of Israel right now is a guy named Bennett, who is supposedly the head of the religious Zionist sector, you know, the ones that are really into the holiness of the state thing that I explained earlier. And he has, his party commands 6 seats out of 120, and you need 61 to make a government. So this is the prime minister with the smallest number of seats. He made a coalition with all these other people to cobble together 61 to push Netanyahu out. And the only thing they agree on, the only thing, is that we got to stop COVID and we got to push the green passports and we got to push masks on everybody and everything else. So like, really, that's the only thing that they're doing. There's nothing else that they agree on. There's no other political agenda except that. That's also a reason why these COVID restrictions are so extreme here. And it's not like what you were saying about New York, like, you know, you present your COVID passport to a restaurant and they're like, yeah, yeah, you're one of us. Yeah, we believe in science. It's not like that. Nobody cares about that. They're not like proud of it. They're just complying because it's the state. Very, very few people believe in it, except for maybe the ultra left wing of the elite media wing, you know, and there aren't many of those. They control a lot, but there aren't many of those in the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, libertarians, I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, which is a sponsor a great many of you are going to want to use and have been waiting for, and that is Drome. A free new values-based dating app. Now, dating apps are terrible. Everybody knows that. You got the face swiping apps, you got the quote-unquote expert matching apps, and both usually waste your time. Well, the solution is values-based matching. In this day and age, if you're a libertarian, you might want to find a libertarian mate. I'm not saying it's impossible to date a non-libertarian, but my gosh, you're going to be interrogated about this and that. And I know people might change to meet you where you are, but why not just find the perfect match off the bat? Well, Drome is a free new values-based dating app where you pick deal breakers and deal makers. There are no experts and match percentages. You don't have to addictively check the app. As soon as somebody matches your deal breakers and deal makers and you match them, you get a notification. If you don't find a deal breaker or deal maker that's important to you, you can add your own anonymously. Drome is also video only for more human interactions. So go to Drome, that's drome.date/woods in your phone browser. Click the iOS or Google button to install and use the invite code woods to sign up. That's Drome, drome.date/woods. Drome, design and meet your perfect match. It's free to use. With the exception of Denmark and Sweden, who've been admirable on this, a lot of countries seem to be wandering in the dark aimlessly without any kind of clearly articulated endgame scenario. So what exactly would it take for us to reach a point where people can have completely normal lives? It's not obvious what that would require. Now, some of them it's the outcomes. The outcomes have to look like this, but some of them it's the inputs, like as long as we're 70% vaccinated, you can have your lives back. Do you have any sense in Israel what they're asking for?
They're not asking for anything. There's nothing clear coming out of anybody that there's any specific goal to achieve anything. That's one of the most depressing things. Like, what are they trying to do? I can't even tell. The only end game that I can see is that they mess everything up so badly that everything just collapses and then there's nothing else to do. There's no other end game that I see, because, again, what's keeping this government together is just the mandates, just the vaccines, just the fear of COVID and pushing it. So they're living on this. Once that's gone, their entire government is gone. And this guy, Bennett, who's leading the country, everybody hates him now. It's not like he's Bibi or Netanyahu that has, you know, people that respect his opinions. Nobody likes him. The religious Zionists that voted for him hate him because he teamed up with the Arabs. And the Arabs hate him anyway. And, you know, everyone who voted for Bibi is not going to vote for him again. So, like, this is his last hurrah. He's just going to stay in as much as he can and push these things as much as he can to try to keep his coalition together. It's all just about political survival for him and his buddies. That's all it is. There are no goals.
I really don't even know what to say these days because, you know, because I've been writing an email newsletter for years now. And when all this hit, the subject matter of the newsletter turned, of course, to these sorts of issues. And then a few months ago, it looked as if even the so-called blue states in the U.S. were starting to drop restrictions and normality was resuming, you know, until they started pointing to Delta and going hysterical. It looked like everything was going back to normal. Now, by the way, in the U.S., it's still the red states are mostly okay. The blue states are the ones where some of them seem to be resisting lockdown and stuff like that. But others, you feel like it's just going to take a moderate winter to get them to go back to it. So we don't really know. Mm-hmm. But I've been covering that. And so I thought back a few months ago, well, maybe I'm obsessing over this now. Like, you know, like maybe it's like being a cold warrior in 1993. You know, just take yes for an answer, take the fact that you won and move on to the next thing. And I did even have some of my readers saying, you know, maybe you do need to talk about whatever else these days. And I was willing to do that. And now it's like somehow with the vaccine passports and stuff, it's become exponentially worse out of the clear blue. And so I have to just keep on talking about it. I know that, I mean, I love the United States, flaws and all, and it would be impossible for me to imagine living anywhere else. I love traveling the world, but I always, at the end, feel kind of like a fish out of water. Like, this is not really my home. This is my home. And I don't want to leave this place. And if I did, well, I'm sure Sweden is limiting the number of people they're letting in. So I don't really know what I would do. When you look at the situation in Israel, I know you probably wouldn't consider leaving. So I guess is your approach just, I'm going to carve out the freest life I can carve out under the circumstances?
Yeah, that is my approach. And look, I mean, I have a great relationship with my wife. I have a very strong family, thank God. I've seen this madness rip apart weaker marriages and rip apart weaker families. And I am being pitted against even my best friends for the tiny little disagreements that we have. And, you know, I'll just give one tiny example, right? Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, is in 2 days. And somebody tested positive during Rosh Hashanah. And now, you know, the message came out, and I'm on the board of this synagogue. The message came out on WhatsApp, and I left WhatsApp because it was driving me crazy. So I didn't get this message. I got it from somebody else, that they're demanding that everyone get a negative test before they join for Yom Kippur. And I'm not going to do that. And I didn't tell anyone that I'm not going to do that. But now, like, the people that were on my side, and I'm on the synagogue because they allow me to pray there without a mask, because I think it's a significant religious problem to pray Jewish prayer with a mask on. And something your viewers should know that is interesting, a biblical point, is that in the original Hebrew, in the Bible, the same word for idol is the same word for mask. It's masecha. Like, the golden calf in Hebrew is called the egel masecha, the mask idol, because a mask is what separates you from God. So there's a serious religious problem with wearing a mask, and I won't do it. But now, you know, they're asking me to take a test. And I'm leading these services. So am I going to fight them? Am I not going to fight them? These are my friends. I don't, like, it's really difficult to know exactly how to handle this, because I don't want to lose them, even though I disagree with them on this testing thing. Because some isolated people really are afraid of COVID and they think they're going to die. I mean, what am I going to do if one guy thinks that? I can't change his mind. So what I have done is I've pulled all my kids out of school. because the kids are pressured to wear masks, and it wasn't as bad as last year. And thank God, this is another great story. My six-year-old son stood up to his principal, who insisted that he put a mask on, and he said to his principal, "I won't do it. It's not right, because I've been training my kids. This is all dehumanization. When you cover your face, you can't see people's identity." And that's what drives me crazy, that it's the first step towards dehumanizing people. You can't see their faces. You lose emotional connection and you become dead. You become this like 1984 nothingness. It starts with the mask. So I've pulled all my kids out of school. I'm homeschooling all of them. I'm using the Ron Paul curriculum. But I also have my religious obligations. I have to teach them Torah. I have to do the Jewish stuff. And I have a background in that, but I also have to work. And my wife is on the verge of losing her job because she doesn't have a green passport. So look, I'm doing the best I can. And, you know, I've been tempted to go back to Florida where I'm from. I'm from Miami and my parents are still there, but I can't do it because first of all, I'm pretty scared of a financial calamity. And I don't know what's going to happen in the U.S. when the dollar does collapse, and because that's inevitable with the amount of spending. I see hyperinflation as inevitable, and I can't give you a timing on it, but I'd rather be here when that happens. And the shekel is based on the dollar because the Bank of Israel has no gold. So whatever happens, you know, when it happens in America, I'd rather be here. It's going to happen in both places, and all things being equal, I'd rather be here. And the whole regime's going to fall down when that happens because there's going to be no funding for all this stuff anyway. So yeah, I'm staying here. I'm being insular. I'm not really moving around much. I'm just hunkering down, educating my children, trying to connect with homeschooling families, and trying to live the freest life I can in this monstrosity of a crazy world we live in.
Well, I love what you said about the mask, whether or not you're in a religious context. The face is the thing that is the distinguishing feature of a human being. And the idea that it's just a trivial thing to cover that routinely in all your human interactions is not normal. And to add insult to injury, it doesn't even seem to accomplish anything. So we're not even getting any benefit from it. And the thing is, early on, I mean, I haven't been right through this whole thing. I've made mistakes. And early on, if somebody were to be crazy enough to have saved all my email newsletters, they'll notice that in the early months, I didn't really talk about masks because I thought they were beside the point, that maybe masks might help get us back to normal. We would wear them for a few months and maybe, I didn't know. What do I know? This isn't my area. I'm just going to look. And then I saw that they didn't work. Okay, so that's the next step. And then, well, but beyond that, as you say, there's just something dehumanizing about it. And then I had Thad Russell on the show, and he made the point that the left seems to like them. It's hard to quite get exactly why. And he said, I think they like the egalitarian aesthetic of it. You know, everybody's walking around. You know, we all, in some ways now, are more interchangeable than we were before. And as you say, the distinguishing features of us are now being covered, and that's no good. I'd like you to share with listeners, and I'll post these things at tomwoods.com/1973. Talk about your newsletter and your blog, please.
Yeah, my blog is, I don't really use it that often or post that often, but when I have an emotional story to tell, I write it. The last few have been COVID stories of how my wife and I and my family have defied the COVID regime. I wrote also a eulogy for the late Bob, late and great Titan of San Francisco, I call him, Bob Wenzel, who I consider my financial mentor in all things investing. In terms of my newsletter, The Endgame Investor, it's based on Bob Wenzel's Economic Policy Journal's investment philosophy. And it's from an Austrian economics perspective on the financial markets, mostly gold and silver, where I give a daily rundown of what's going on in the gold and silver markets. And my trading philosophy is based on emotional balance instead of, for example, like chart patterns or Elliott Wave or anything like that. It's more of a personal approach that if you understand what the end game is, you understand the nature of what money is and why gold is money and, you know, a Federal Reserve note is only a money substitute, and you understand where the end game is and where it's going, then all you have to do is really maintain emotional balance through it. Make sure you have enough cash for the dips. Make sure you have enough positions if the end game happens and, you know, gold goes to infinity and the dollar collapses. But as long as you maintain that emotional balance, you can stay in the game and you will make it to the end. And of course, based on principles of Austrian economics and analysis, So you can get a two-week free trial by either Googling the Endgame Investor or going to my blog, thejewishlibertarian.com. There's a link there. And, you know, check it out, see how I write, see what my style is. I'm a pretty good writer. And I think I have a lot of unique things to say about the gold and silver markets and what is going on in the world. And you'll probably enjoy it if you come from this camp.
Excellent. All right. So that'll be up at tomwoods.com/1973. Well, thanks, Rafi, for this briefing. I do feel like I get a little bit more what's going on over there. And I think what you're attempting to do over there, and again, balancing all this with family obligations and work, is just downright heroic. And I hope you can keep it up. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I consider you a hero too as well, Tom.
All right, folks, tomorrow on the show, Jay Bhattacharya, professor of medicine at Stanford University, joins us once again. And we're just having a frank talk about a bunch of things. And for the first time in nearly 2,000 episodes of The Tom Woods Show, I am not putting that episode on YouTube because I know they just take it down, even though there's nothing untruthful in the whole episode. And that would be my second strike, and I just don't want that to happen. So in place of that, I'll have a placeholder video of me saying, hey, everybody, if you'd like to hear this forbidden interview with the great heroic Jay Bhattacharya, who's been a voice of reason amidst a sea of COVID monomania, then here's the link to my Odyssey page, O-D-Y-S-E-E, where there's a Tom Woods TV page. You should go there. I have a channel there, and that's where it'll be. So maybe I'll have some quick redirect like tomwoods.com/blah, blah, blah that'll get you to that Odyssey page. But that's what I'm going to do. So if you're a regular listener using a podcast app, you're not going to have any problem finding this episode. It'll be delivered to your podcast app. But if you listen on YouTube, tomorrow's episode is not going to be here, or it'll just be a notification telling you to click a link and go listen to it over on Odyssey, which is where you can actually expect free speech these days. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.